Before I start, I just thought I'd tell you about a friend of mine who came to visit 2-3 weeks ago. She's a law librarian from London. It must be 30 years since she's come to Manchester. And we did the usual, what I consider to be tourist trail these days, things like the Bridgewater Hall, Salford Quays, the Lowry, John Ryland's Library, which I think is fantastic. I actually spend a lot of time in there. And she was very impressed with the city, and as walking around what was unusual for Manchester, a nice sunny Sunday afternoon, she said to me, "Do you think that Manchester's now Britain's second city?" And I have to say, it's not a question I'd really thought about for many, many years. But I did, and I gave her a serious answer, and I said, "Well, I guess it is, actually, yes." And she said to me, "Well, yes, it's certainly got a lot more going for it than Birmingham." And I laughed because I said, "Well, actually, I was thinking about London, not Birmingham." So Manchester, I think, is quite special. It doesn't fit well within the greater northwest, I think. It's a fantastic environment. I'm a Mancunian. I've lived here virtually all my life. The business is in Manchester. I'm very proud of the city. So why am I talking to you? I think many of you must be wondering. Site Director Walwork Heat Treatment Limited, that's in Bury. We tell the rest of the world that we're in Manchester because most people haven't heard of Bury. But also I'm the chair of the Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce, Engineering and Manufacturing Sector Council, which I think if they'd tried to make a snappier title, we couldn't have done better than that. It's a real mouthful. So the Chamber of Commerce, I think, has a role to play in business growth. The Chamber of Commerce used to be an amalgamation of all these little towns in Manchester, from Rochdale in the north down to Trafford in the south. And some years ago, they were all squozing together in a Greater Manchester Chamber, still retaining the town focus, but with the conurbation view. And then a couple of years ago, the Chamber decided that apart from the regional focus, they'd do well to set up a sector focus, and the Engineering Manufacturing Sector Council was set up. And I thought it was a brilliant idea because we do business all over the UK, never mind Manchester. And the opportunity to talk to other engineering and manufacturing companies, many of whom are not customers because they don't use our type of service, I thought it was a fantastic idea. For us to be able to share ideas, best practice, problems, and so on. So that's why I'm here, because I'm Chair of the Engineering and Manufacturing Sector Council, and I make no apologies that the focus of my talk today is firmly on manufacturing. That's what I know about. I don't feel at all able to talk about the service industry. But I think it fits in well with the previous two presentations. Manufacturing is a big exporter when it comes to technology. Manufacturing is the big user. I asked my sector council, I told them I was coming to this meeting, and said, "Okay, guys, what do we think about innovation?" Most of my committee are medium-sized companies, so this fits in well with that. And the very first thing they said is the UK exports on innovation, not price. That's why innovation is important to us. And I was quite taken with that because it's not really apparent to me in my business experience. The next thing is that universities are in the mix, but they're not necessary for innovation. They're part of the story. The knowledge transfer partnership schemes are excellent. We've had one. I'll be coming onto that in a little while. But a couple of colleagues on the committee have had them, and they see a lot of value in the KTP scheme. The comment was, it's easy to get lost in the university maze. You might decide that you need some help from a university, but there are so many of them. How do you get in touch with them? What do they offer? And the last one is fear of innovation. There's a worry about the cost of it and the fear of failure, quite frankly. But the clear message they asked me to give tonight is the universities need to promote their services to business. We deal with, in my business, about 8,000 customers. Some of them we've dealt with for 30 years. We feel we know their business well. We feel they know our business well. I'm amazed about the things that they don't know that we do. So even though the universities go out there and make the case for their services, quite frankly, my guys think you're not working hard enough. Unfortunately, that's just life. That is sales. Recently, I don't know if people have seen this, there was an Inside and Northwest survey. This is across all businesses, it's not just medium size, but I think it portrays an accurate picture. 2/3 of companies who hadn't worked with universities didn't know what was on offer. Quite surprising, really. However, 92% of companies who had worked with universities would do so again. So basically, it's a case of getting the horse to water. Once it's drunk, it likes it, it's going to come back. Ian Gordon from Lancaster University Management School made a comment that most people want a one-stop shop. And I think that's that those two elements put together are the major barriers for medium-sized enterprises working with universities. The universities need to sell what they can do to the businesses. And also, when they engage them, the businesses want a very simple process and procedure to carry on. My company, Warwick Heat Treatment, founded in 1959 by Robert Warwick. Three sites, Manchester, Birmingham and Cambridge. Naturally, the Bury Manchester site is the head office. We employ 245 people. We have a turnover of about £15 million. We're specialists in heat treatment and coating of metals. That's our main business. Having said that, we also manufacture some of our own vacuum equipment, because we can't find other people to do so. We sell that vacuum equipment to other manufacturers. They tend to be sort of special one-offs that people can't find anyone else to build. We have a significant research and development department of physical vapor deposition, PVD coatings, which are ceramic coatings, for want of a better word, which go on top of mainly metals to improve the performance. And finally, again, because we can't buy the sort of castings that we want to use internally in the business, we have our own nickel superalloy foundry, which has been going for about 20 years. We've been selling these castings now outside of the business. Typically, we're selling about £500,000 of the year of our £15 million turnover. And we found quite an unlikely market, in my opinion anyway, in Scandinavia. They seem to be going very well there. We don't really know why, to be quite honest. Our major markets, let's start at the very bottom. We support sole traders through to aircraft makers. In a year, between the three companies, we have slightly over 8,000 customers. Many of them we deal with every day. We run out something like 25 trucks every day all over Britain, picking up people's work, which they've manufactured. We bring it back to our factories, heat treat or coat it, and return it often the next day. About 80% of our work is turned around overnight. So we're a service industry, really. Major market for us, aircraft manufacture, is probably the largest sector for us. Automotive, passenger vehicles, again, a big market. It tends to be a few customers, very high volume. Automotive heavy vehicles is something I think this country is very, very good at, and it's a market which we support quite heavily. Medical devices and pharmaceuticals was a market that we identified as being something that should be good to get into in the UK, both in terms of the tooling to make things like medical pills, surgeons' instruments. Britain has quite a vibrant medical device manufacturing business. Also, body implants. We do coatings on knees, hips, this sort of thing that go inside the body. Oil and gas is a market we're just getting into. We should have been in it years ago, but quite frankly, the size of the parts are a bit big for us. But it is a massive market. It's global. And again, one that should be staying in the UK for quite some time. Automotive motor racing is quite bespoke, really. And yet, if anyone watches Formula One, the vast majority of the cars are manufactured in the UK. And if you want to see scary engineering, automotive is the place. Aircraft is very pedestrian, thank goodness. We don't want aircraft dropping out of the skies. But the things that the F1 engineers can make with so little material and the properties that they can get out of it is absolutely remarkable. And many of the engineering kids I see, that's what they want to get into, automotive engineering. General engineering is still alive and kicking, much to people's amazement. Tool making has changed greatly over the years. It's still an important business to us. But basically, coming back to the bottom, if you've got a piece of metal and it wants heat treating, if we can fit it in, we will do. Little montage. I kind of thought I'd be able to point at the pictures, so you'll have to bear with me. The top, it'll be your left, which says Tech Back On, is our factory in Cambridge. The chap in the middle is Robert Walwork, who died about 10 years ago now, aged 80. Fantastic guy, great bloke to work for, a real sort of Victorian father figure. If you worked hard, you did well. If you didn't, you got sacked. That suited me. I've been there for 35 years, I guess. Top right-hand corner is the Birmingham plant. Moving down then, we've got a couple of guys pouring metal out of the furnace to make our heat treatment jigs. The bottom corner there is our R&D facility in Cambridge. We've got quite a well-established set of equipment there and very good staff. And I certainly picked up on this idea of sharing equipment. It's a fantastic idea. It is stunningly expensive to buy. It does go out of date very, very quickly. What tends to happen these days is the software goes out of date and that's it, you chuck it in the bin. But when you've paid several tens of thousands for a piece of kit, that hurts. The lady in the middle at the bottom there is looking at a piece of equipment which we've actually built and we're now using in production. The other two photographs are just of traditional heat treatment equipment. The bottom one is a vacuum furnace, sort of the modern furnace, if you like. And in the middle of the picture, something we'll come on to in a minute, a seal quench furnace, which is our sort of workhorse furnace. So to put things into perspective, the vacuum furnaces, we have something like 22 of them. They cost between £400,000 and £700,000 each. The seal quench furnaces, we've not bought one for years. We tend to buy them from auction and build them up ourselves, but typically a couple hundred thousand. So it's a very capital-intensive industry that we're in. So our workforce, very interesting listening to the statistics of the number of people in businesses and so on. I was relating this to our businesses. Of the 245 people, 100 work in Bury. The rest is split equally at the two sites. We have 16 STEM graduates, science, technology, engineering and maths. In all honesty, we have no science, no maths. They're all technology and engineering. I'm a metallurgist, so I class that as technology. We've got four STEM PhDs. These guys live down in Cambridge and work in the R&D department. Three STEM ambassadors. I'm proud of that. The irony is that we all discovered we were STEM ambassadors independently. This is a scheme set up. We're all run by Manchester Science Museum. And our role is to go out as scientists, technologists, into schools to talk to youngsters about the sort of work we do and to get them interested in this sort of career. The job I very quickly realised didn't really revolve around talking to the children. It really revolved around talking to the teachers because the teacher's idea of manufacturing is that if you've got some qualifications, you go off to university. And if you've got no qualifications, you go into manufacturing. And life is just not like that. Talking about growth underpinning all this, we have three MBAs. Two of them we've helped through their MBA whilst they've been employed by the company. One joined us with one. So I think looking at the sort of national, average statistics, we're fairly well placed. But there again, it's a very technical sort of business. I wanted to talk about innovation because I think it's a driver for growth. That's been my experience at Walwork for all these years. And this first example is of a knowledge transfer partnership. A project was facing internally. What we wanted to do was save energy. The group currently spends about £2 million a year on energy. So out of a £15 million turnover, we are fairly energy intensive. I'm ashamed to say, or I'm not really ashamed, but it's ironic that our KTP was with Sheffield University. And we can talk about why that was later. And the irony was that the project was self-financing within 24 hours. And this delightful KTP joined us, Yao Wu. And her first trip down the factory floor, she asked the question, why are there two pilot lights on each furnace? And the directors looked at each other and said, I don't know, but they've been there for 30 years. Let's take one off. You'd think with all these graduates and PhDs that we'd be able to do this sort of thing ourselves. But we realised that we weren't going to get round to doing this work ourselves. We needed outside help. And we were very, very fortunate in that the graduate we got just fitted us perfectly. You know, but like all life, you need a bit of luck sometimes. So the benefits of that. She was actually taken on to look at the process gas we use. We needed quite a long-term research into the sort of mixes of gas we could use, the volumes and flows of gas we could use. That's what she was taken on to do. And at the end of her project, she'd identified £30,000 a year saving on process gas. We still, this project was 4 or 5 years ago. So every year since then, that's what we've saved. The pilot lights, from, you know, within the first week, put another £20,000 saving on that. The other thing that we looked at was replacing our burners. Whilst they are relatively modern, burner technology has moved on remarkably quickly. We've put in one set of burners already. The furnace heating time's halved. The furnace gas consumption on that furnace has been reduced by two-thirds. I was shocked and actually checked the figures myself to make sure. And also, we've improved our carbon footprint. There are the reasons why we've not been able to roll up those burners out to other furnaces yet, but it is a program that we're carrying on with. The next bit of innovation, though, was quite different. This is based down at our Cambridge factory. It was I always want to say trustee savings bank, I can't get it out of my head. A technology strategy board supported LibTech project. The basic problem is that the aircraft there, the A380, is too heavy. And the designers have been trying to drop weight out of it. One of the things they identify that they might lose a lot of weight is by taking all the very heavy steel bearings out of it that you land on, which quite frankly frightens the hell out of me. titanium was the material of choice. It's not strong enough to do the job, and our job was to design some kind of a system that would enable titanium to be used. We were successful with that. The partner sales or savings, depending upon whether you look at the bearing manufacturer who is making the sales or the aircraft company who's making the savings, are many millions of pounds per year. I can't tell you how much because I don't know. There's a link at the bottom. I don't know if this presentation will be released, but there's a link at the bottom detailing this project. And I'm also very proud to say that the TSB use our project to show how to fill the paperwork in if you're applying for these sort of projects. For ourselves, though, the benefits currently, and the production is in its infancy, we've got £250,000 per year sale of coatings. We're expecting that to double up to £500,000 a year. This is just on two bearings on the aircraft. There are lots of other aircraft. There are lots of other bearings. So the market is remarkable. What Airbus did say is that they expected to save £2.8 million on the total life of the aircraft. This is really just fuel saving. Quite a surprising figure. Remember I was talking about a colleague talking about fear of failure. Our investment for that was £557,000. So it's a fair old whack. On top of that, we got a TSB grant of £387,000. And quite frankly, the project wasn't likely to have gone ahead without TSB support. Again, the academic partner was Sheffield University, two industrial partners. So the complete investment by TSB of around about £750,000 certainly paid dividends to our company, most certainly, to Airbus, most certainly, and I'd say to the country as a whole. Conscious that Berry Black Pudding Company is not yet a medium-sized business. The lady in the picture there is Debbie Pierce. She used to work on Berry Market, which is down below that. The observant of you might notice there's sunshine in Berry, and I think that's being photoshopped after, to be honest. Her product is black puddings, and her difficulty was that Berry Market's only open 3 days a week. So what is she going to do on the other 2 days of the week? Where else can she sell her black puddings? And being an innovative sort of person, she thought the internet. Now, black puddings don't travel, and so her innovation was quite simple, packaging. If you can get packaging so that you can post these things out, then you can sell them on the internet. You can also increase the storage life. You can do things like selling them to supermarkets on the local shelves. And you may well have seen the Berry Black Puddings as you've been doing your weekly shop. So here's the packaging. It's just a plastic coating. But to me, I think we shouldn't lose sight of these very simple things that can transform businesses. So Debbie now employs 50 people. She was a sole trader 3 days a week. She now employs 50 people making black puddings. And I did ask her to confirm this figure because I just didn't believe it. I asked her a couple of times, and what she makes every week is 35,000 kilos of black pudding. So what I would say to this audience is let's not ignore the small companies. They will become medium-sized. We were small ones. And also, let's not just think of high-tech. There are very simple things that these businesses can do to succeed. What about barriers to growth? I don't give any provenance to these apart from meeting people at trade associations, at the chamber. I can't prove these statistically, but people tell me difficulty obtaining finance. Interestingly, I'm sorry, that's probably me, sorry. Debbie from the Black Pudding Company said a few weeks ago that her boiler broke. She approached the bank for £30,000. That's not a lot of money to get you back up and running, and the bank just turned her down. My own view is that if you try hard enough, there's always going to be finance there. It's just that it's a different world. Lack of suitably trained people. We've had this problem with graduates, that they certainly come into our business and have no idea about what is required for business life. That's a problem. But the main difficulty is at the lower end, where you would get trained technicians. The industrial cycle's gone through. The colleges are no longer training people. And all of a sudden, we're running out of the people of my age to fill the gaps. And certainly, both trade associations, which I work with, are trying to tackle that from a trade association point of view to get courses developed for technicians in colleges across the country. EU regulation, and I cite REACH, which is to do with chemicals. Basically, Europe's decided that they want an inventory of all the chemicals that mankind uses. And if they don't like the look of them, you won't be able to use them. That's a real problem. I'll come on to that a little bit later. And also the unintended consequences of new regulation. For instance, retirement age. We're now in the embarrassing position of having older employees, very valued employees, that you feel quite difficult about trying to strike up a conversation to ask what their retirement plans are for fear of being accused of ageism. Also, I would say on that, we keep talking about youth unemployment. It seems to me that if you get rid of the retirement age, you're going to create youth unemployment. I would like to mention a few points from the Heseltine report. It's not a political statement. I'm not a political animal. But I thought it was written in plain language, and some of the points, to me, were self-evident. And these are the points which I've dragged out personally and thought, yes, these are the sort of things that would benefit my business, the sort of people I know, both at the Chamber and indeed the trade associations. An industry council established between government and sector, I think, is eminently sensible. I think government needs to relate much more with industry, and this is a very good way of doing it. Government to commit to long-term funding of science and research. Again, blindingly obvious, I think we're setting ourselves up as a technologically excellent country, and if government isn't going to make money available, well, it's just not going to happen. I like this one. UK Trade and Industry Technology Strategy Board and the Research Councils to promote inward investment in the UK. We've got lots of very clever people there going out to all over the world. Why not try and encourage businesses to come here? It is a global world. You think about British companies like Kellogg's, well, they're American, and so on and so forth. I think what we're trying to do is attract businesses onto these shores. I don't think it particularly matters who owns them. Private sector involvement in drafting regulation, that's close to my heart. I think we've experienced so much of this that regulation comes down to companies and we say, how on earth are we going to implement that? I come back to the unintended consequences of the retirement age. Government to promote British interest in the EU. Now, the feeling amongst people I talk to is that that doesn't happen. Whether it does or whether it doesn't, I don't know, but that's our feeling. That British interest is not promoted. The REACH regulations, I think, illustrate that very well. They've been coming along, and we feel that government says, and the civil servants, they're very, very helpful. They're very, very keen to help. They couldn't do more for us. But they say we're powerless. It's an EU regulation. Quite frankly, for small trade associations to be having to take these battles to Europe is too much of a burden, and we'll lose. Government to identify EU regulations well in advance, I think we've covered that. Strong, stable business support at local level. Again, I think we've touched on this earlier. The Greater Manchester model, I think, is very good. It works well in terms of supporting different types of business. It works well supporting them regionally. The one thing I would strongly criticise the Chamber of Commerce for tonight is I'm sure that they should have been able to fill these tables. And I think there's been some technical hitch. Trade associations to become more professional. I've had involvements with a few trade associations. Some are excellent and some, quite frankly, are poor. And I think if the trade associations were forced to become more professional so that they could give a much better service to the members, that would be very, very helpful. Leadership and management skills taught at all levels of education. I think that's paramount. I became a director before I'd had any management training whatsoever, a fact about which I'm ashamed. And it occurred to me then, if I'm taking on this kind of responsibility, I better learn what I'm doing. And the prospects of joining Warwick as a metallurgist without a degree and giving people advice about the materials to use and so on would send shockwaves through the business. The fact that someone's made a director without any management skills doesn't seem to. I think that's really paramount. I've used some block caps on the next one. Availability of long-term patient loan capital. I think we're very much short-termism, certainly when it comes to manufacturing. Our company is 54 years old. We started as three people. We're now 245. It's taken a long time. That's what we actually wanted to do. We have a competitor whose business plan was to become the largest eatery in the world, and they have. I'm pleased to see they're in Macclesfield, a company called Bodycote, and they have something like 300 companies all over the globe. But it's not for us. Patient loan capital is what we need. What they need is heavy investment for a quick return on the stock market. Business engagement in school curriculum. Well, I think we're almost back to leadership and management skills. I think that business needs to talk to kids at an early age to tell them what it's like in manufacturing particularly. Yes, I still have overalls and steel toe-cap boots. I don't mind wearing them. I've worn them for years and years. The place that I work, most people stay there for a long time. There are people who've been there much longer than I have. And for why? Because it's a great place to work. So there's a story to tell to kids about the sort of things we expect from them, that the university isn't the only route for them, though I would never try and discourage anybody from going to university, but there are other routes. Local funding for vocational training. I think each area has got its own needs. You look at Birmingham, for instance, it is still metal forming, still the home of electroplating. They've got very special requirements for their kind of training. This is certainly a case of one size does not fit all. Industry councils is something the government, Heseltine is suggesting we set up, which is a sort of conglomeration, if you like, of sectors, to work with higher education to ensure courses are relevant. I think that's very true. With our graduates that we've taken on, we find the technical knowledge is okay, although I've been a bit surprised that one industrial chemist we took on using techniques in his fume cupboard, which I learnt not to do when I was about 14, and blew up some glassware and managed to get acid on his lab coat. I just can't believe that can happen to someone with a degree. And also, again, the criticism that they've very little idea about what business is about. You know, simple things like picking up the telephone is alien to them. So we could do a lot of simple things there to ensure that course is relevant. So thank you. I feel to have grumbled a lot here tonight. It's not the case. I think that the medium-sized businesses, on the whole, are doing very well in this country. I think that they don't actually need an awful lot more to make them accelerate quite rapidly. And I think it's the frills around the edges that we need just to make things happen. Thank you.